Hello and welcome to another BRC podcast. My name is Carl Monk and I'm the Head of Retail Insights and Analytics here at the British Retail Consortium. Today on the podcast, we'll be talking to Nick Harrison and Deborah O'Neill from Oliver Wyman on the importance of data in retail, what techniques brands are using to better leverage it, and what to expect in the future. So without further ado, sit back and enjoy our conversation. Today to talk data with Oliver Wyman. We have Nick Harrison, senior partner at Oliver Wyman, on the management committee of retail and CPG practice and co-leading retail globally, and Deborah O'Neill, head of UK digital and a partner at the firm. So data is a broad topic. So Nick, how about you kick us off? Analytics and more generally, the ability to understand consumers is fast becoming a differentiator between successful and failing retail. What do you see in the market at the moment, both in terms of where it's going well and if you're able to say where it's going badly?
Yes. No, sure. I mean, obviously, retail's super competitive at the moment, right? We all know that. We see that out there. And it's only by making data-driven decisions can retailers, you know, tune their offering to their consumers better, you know, be it their pricing or their promotions or their product offer, and, you know, by doing so, get ahead of their competitors. So completely making data-driven decisions is, you know, at the heart of what any retailer needs to do. I think, you know, what I see out there is those who are getting it right, what they do is they start with the business decision first. So they look at, you know, what business decision am I trying to make, you know, be it which product to put in which shop, you know, which product offer to run, what price to set, and then they're kind of working back from that and they're saying, what insight do I need to make a better decision on that, and then finally what data do I need to back up that insight and get to that insight. So, you know, that's a key success factor we see is people, you know, starting with the end in mind and working back, not starting from the data, swimming around in the data, getting lost, producing lots of exciting insights, but not knowing what to do with them. Mm. I don't know, Deborah, what you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it comes back to people at the top of the business are usually quite clear on what they're trying to achieve. But if that sort of thread of insight doesn't run through the whole organisation, and you don't have everybody working with the same mentality, then a lot of energy can go into making decisions which can be quite expensive, and particularly in retail when things move fast, you really need to have those insights and analytics at your fingertips, because you may have to change decision pretty rapidly and can't wait months for someone to do the most sort of perfect bottom-up analysis every time.
Definitely. And what sort of competitive advantage are you seeing sort of between the new retailers and sort of the legacy systems that some of these retailers are using?
You mean between like new entrants versus incumbent retailers? Huh? I think it's an interesting question. The newer retailers do often have an advantage in this area, right? Because they've got more modern IT systems, so it's easier to get the data out. Whereas the traditional guys are often, you know, sort of saddled with legacy systems which are harder to work with. So that's one part of it. But also I think that what I see is the biggest differentiator is actually the newer retailers normally find it easier to recruit and retain the talent they need to work with the data. So they'll find it easier to hire data scientists, they'll find it easier to, you know, hire analysts and you know, actually get the best people. And that's really what makes the difference. You know, even on a legacy system you can get the data out, but if you haven't got the people to work with it, you can't do anything with it.
And how would these businesses go about attracting this new talent, would you say?
I think it's a good... I mean, Debs, you see this across sector, right?
Yeah, which, I mean, I think it's true across most sectors at the moment with the sort of new entrants in all spaces, whether that is retail, banking, you know, sort of aviation, energy. We're seeing these new incumbents come. And I think the thing, if you look at their talent pool and their leadership teams, they more often come from a more diverse background. Yeah. There is much more comfort in those organisations of hiring people who are smart with transferable skills, who've got the energy to solve the problem, versus have they got enough experience in Industry X? And actually that's what's disruptive, because people are coming in and saying, well, I don't know how a retailer works, but I know how I would, you know, go and solve this problem. And I think that's why we see, you know, things like marketplaces on some of the big e-commerce sites becoming very popular, because they sort of realise they aren't going to be the people who do all of the provision front to back of the whole value chain, and they're much more comfortable with a more, you know, hypermarket online distribution system. And I think that is something people are going to have to get comfortable with. If you want to compete in this space, you're going to have to go and find talent from wherever it is, not just in the industry you're in. Mm.
You know, that outcome-based approach sounds like it ties in with your first point very well.
No, completely, yeah.
And I mean, you know, technology is a very broad subject, and as you mentioned, that, you know, other sectors have had substantially more disruption in recent years. You know, what are some of the other examples that you can pick out of the wider sort of tech sector that would help retailers in this current climate?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there has been probably an obsession about, can you hire enough data scientists and can you hire enough people to do analytics? I think almost for some organisations, the need for that is diminishing, not in terms of needing to do that work, it definitely needs to be done, but the opportunities to leverage what is a very thriving open source community out there. Some of the really tough analytical algorithmic problems have actually been solved and are nicely packaged up in libraries. So you don't necessarily need to have the person who's going to come up with the genius solution for building the algorithm. You need the people who can really bring it together and apply it to the business effectively. So it probably does mean that for some organisations, they can sort of change the profile they're looking for to be more the bridging roles of people who are excellent project managers, excellent sort of insight problem solvers, and have a little bit of analytics skill with some people who are technically able to apply that into the existing system, but don't need to be the fundamental people who write the algorithm from first principles. They just need to know which ones to use and where to apply it.
The other point just to add, which is interesting, is of course one of the advantages that traditional retailers often have is they have more data than the new entrants, right? So they've had more consumers for longer, so they've got just a bigger set of consumer data. And that, if they can use it right, that should be able to power their business, you know, more strongly. That also can be an advantage in recruiting, you know, analytical talent, if you can frame the nature of the problems those people will be working on in a broader sense because of that broader data. So that's another thing which I think incumbents maybe often underplay themselves on how they could sell us.
And I think actually for retailers, they could learn a lot. For a long time, retailers were sort of ahead of industries like banking in terms of sort of analytics and innovation prowess. But actually, I think in the past years, banking has been so disrupted. The sort of learnings from that we're seeing can apply quite nicely to retailers, which is, I think, as Nick says, that data set that you have of customers going back so far and on a large footprint is a massive advantage. And, you know, we're seeing banks take a similar approach where they know an awful lot about people's spending habits and where the money is, and actually now looking at ways of actually using that as a way to reinvent themselves in a way that a new startup can't. And I think it's actually an advantage that many people haven't taken sort of hold of yet, because the IT systems and probably it's felt to be very difficult. But I think some of the tools and technologies out there really start that to be possible. And I guess now is the time for sort of existing retailers to really take that advantage and get moving before, I guess, the moment passes.
So I have a dream, which is one day we will have on our phone the Food Butler app, which is a service which allows me to input some parameters about, you know, my family is it's two adults, it's three kids, it's a guinea pig, a hamster, a gerbil, and two fish tanks. Now, if I could input that into a thing, set some settings about healthiness, you know, how adventurous I am on the food, how much I want to spend, and then this thing could sort out my food needs for the week. That would be an amazing service. Now, technologically, we're not that far away from that. And actually, the big incumbent food retailers should be in a better position to develop that than some of the new entrants. If, to your point, Debs, they can, you know, take advantage of this data window they've got before everybody else catches up.
Let me know where I can sign up to that.
Yes.
But that's an interesting point about, you know, these pools of data that retailers hold, because there is a balance to be struck. You know, individual understanding and concern over data is growing, and it's become a more pressing topic in recent years.
Yeah.
You know, all retailers are attempting to build a single customer view and, you know, move away from these traditional metrics to ones like lifetime value. Not all are successful.
Yeah.
With this specific customer data being more readily available, what does this mean, you know, for the future retail?
Yeah, I mean, I think again, it's a great point, right? Because retail historically, or you know, traditional retail, has been a kind of a product and store business, and of course, retailers were always and still are incredibly customer focused, but they're customer focused through the products they put on the shelf and through the stores they have and how they run those stores. Now, that's very different to how most online retailers work. they're companies that think about acquiring customers, developing customers, stopping customers churning, and working with customers on that life cycle in the way, you know, banks and telcos have forever, right? So as retailers capture that data, there's a fundamental shift coming in how the business ticks, and they all will be starting to look at, you know, acquiring, developing, and, you know, retaining customers rather than quote just products and stores. So that's a fundamental shift in the shape of the P&L, the way the business works, you know, the way the business is structured, everything. And again, you know, a lot are struggling with that, right? It's hard to embed those metrics in your day-to-day processes.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those questions that comes up a lot is, can you evolve what you've got today and sort of get those things embedded fast enough versus do you need to take the competitive advantages you've already got, like the data, your existing footprint, your brand and reputation, which shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah.
But do you actually have to be a bit more bold in terms of saying we'll start again with the good things we've got, but not try and fix what's broken? Because I think a lot of energy and time goes into sort of what people would call a transformation project, which is moving you from where you are today to probably only the status quo, but may take you a long time and a lot of money, versus trying to leapfrog the status quo to where you think you need to be in, you know, X number of years. And I think it is something that we'll see more people having to have very hard looks in the mirror. And I do think it comes back to that advantage of keeping the things that really are an advantage, but not trying to fight with the things that you know no longer are fit for purpose.
No, again, I fully agree. And I think this, you know, this concept of greenfielding, as we call it, you know, which we've seen, you know, in the energy industry, in telco and in, you know, banking, I'll let you come back to in a sec, Debs. You know, I think greenfielding is about to come to retail. And if I was a traditional retailer, you know, I would think about, you know, building the Food Butler food service app separately to the on the side of my organisation in a greenfield bit of the organisation with access to the customer base and the data, but in a separate entity to stop the legacy getting in the way.
And I know that has caused some concerns in the past for people about, in a cost-pressured environment, does that balloon your costs and is it actually an expensive thing to do? So I think, you know, we'd always caution that, you know, yes, if you're going to go in greenfield, that means you have to be prepared to know what's going to stop and what you're going to migrate and have that plan. Because otherwise, I think what you end up doing is running multi-system, which we know is very expensive. So it does take some really strong leadership and decision-making to really be able to land this as a vision. It's very hard to actually get to the point where you switch something off and, you know, realise it is legacy that you're going to actually decommission at some point.
So, Nick, what do you mean by greenfielding?
Yeah, so sorry, probably you're dropping into a bit of jargon there. So really what we mean is building a new bit of the business or a new service outside of the original business on a greenfield site, if you like. So that would mean, you know, starting afresh over here with, you know, new technology, new systems, potentially, you know, some people from the original business, some new recruits, and it's kind of like a startup business on the side of the original business.
So what some companies call like a skunk works, that kind of innovation hub outside of the core business function.
So I think, you know, I would agree it's a similar concept. I think we would go a little bit bolder and say, you know, there has been a risk in the past of people setting up too many experimental ideas that never really turn into a business change. And you learn some things and it's experiment, you know, you learn something and you experiment, but you don't really get to the P&L change or real outcome. So I think it can start off as a sort of skunk's works to check it is going to be successful, but it very rapidly has to scale into a meaningful business that, you know, has a strong top line impact. So that sort of comes back to the point of you have to have a migration plan. You have to know where does this fit in your future strategy, so that you're either are going to decommission something else or it's a big enough opportunity that it's worth the investment. Otherwise, I think, you know, we risk proliferating people's cost bases without getting to a final outcome. I think it's similar to some of the sort of technology platforms that you see where they will test something for a while and pretty rapidly decommission it if it doesn't look like it's going in the right direction. And I think we would generally advise going for fewer, bigger bets than doing an awful lot of small things that become very expensive and it's hard to scale rapidly. I guess it's similar to what we're seeing in banking in terms of, you know, some of the incumbent banks really going to town on building themselves a new digital challenger, but with a view that it'll replace something they already have, or they go into a new digital product line, but something that scales rapidly, whether that's an online insurance or similar.
No, I mean, I think it's a great, you know, it's fully agree that this kind of the greenfielding or the new business build or the venture, you know, arms, whatever you want to call them, you need to be careful not that they don't get fragmented, but equally, I do think it's a great time for traditional retailers to be experimenting with this kind of stuff. You know, if you think about it, technology, I think we're on the verge of changing how we interact with products across retail categories because of technology. You know, if you look at clothing, there are services out there now which help you match the right wardrobe for yourself. You know, food, we just discussed the food butler. It's the same in other retail categories. So technology can help customers get products that are better suited for their needs, waste less products, live healthier lives, a whole bunch of things. You know, in banking, save money. So we're on the edge of changing how we interact with products and with the retail sector, full stop. And again, as I said, incumbents have the data to make the most of that if they act now. So the more they can get these venture arms or greenfields or whatever you want to call them going, the more, you know, they can be at the forefront of transforming the retail world, not, you know, just leaving it to the new entrants. Not that there's anything wrong with new entrants, they're bringing some great new ideas as well.
I think we'll start seeing some blurring of the lines between industries as well. And,
agreed.
You know, I think we've started seeing more almost cooperation between new entrants and incumbents rather than it always being competition. There's the horrible phrase that I came up with that, you know, cooperation.
Yeah. Good consulting phrase.
Yeah, which, you know, I think we'll see more of because not every entrant has to be a threat. They can be an opportunity for partnership.
Well, sounds like there's a huge amount of opportunity out there. And there are a lot of buzzwords in tech as well. So, I mean, you've touched on a few here. But, I mean, if you had to back one horse, the most exciting technology out there that can really, you know, drive change at these traditional retailers, what would you say it is? Don't feel you have to answer.
I mean, I think there is, you know, in terms of technology, there is a lot of excitement about, you know, AI and chatbots finally coming to the fore and really being, you know, sensitive enough, you know, fair enough, human enough, dare I say it, to sort of be useful to people. I think actually for retailers in the industry to really take advantage of that, they need to solve some of the other problems so that you don't end up with a world where you've got the world's best AI or chatbot, but it doesn't actually lead to better service outcomes, whatever the thing you're trying to solve for, because the back end can't support it. So I think there's tons of technology out there. It's just really making it work coherently versus being one, you know, silver bullet that's going to solve it all.
So build the foundations before you start reaching for these new technologies.
Yeah, and I think, you know, human capability is often the rate limiting step as well, right? You know, the humans have to keep up with the technology and make it work for the customers in the right way. So I think I would, you know, maybe I'm becoming an old man or a Luddite, but I'm excited about technology, but only as an enabler, not as the main deal, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to the fact that there's actually a sort of, you know, dare I say the phrase, workforce of the future to be solved to go along with this, which is, you know, rather than the historic, here's the pricing, buying, technology teams as complete silos, we're expecting people to be more sort of broader and able to work more seamlessly across those topics, which I think as we see, you know, people's skills increase, you know, experience increase, it will be much more natural for people to say, I am part of a retail innovation team or a retail product design team, and you know, it wouldn't be beyond them to sort of do, you know, some data analysis and sort of pricing and, you know, a whole variety of things. And I think that's just the nature of work we're seeing across industries, actually.
So more hybrid skill sets with sort of data analysis as a core. Thank you very much for tuning in to another BRC podcast. We hope you found our discussion thought-provoking and learned some things that you can apply to your own business. If you'd like to find out more about any of the topics we touched on today, please feel free to get in contact. Once again, I hope you enjoyed this episode and hope you can join us again on a future BRC podcast.